You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to episode 430 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we're coming to you from separate locations this week. I'm in Seattle, Washington, home of the four-time WNBA champion, Storm.
And I'm coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion, Seattle Seahawks.
Was this a doomed Seattle sports week?
No.
It wasn't?
I don't know. It
didn't have that feeling on so Saturday.
Nothing matters enough to be doomed in this time period.
Fair, but it did. The teams did play as if I said it was going to be the biggest week in Seattle sports history.
But there just weren't enough teams that matter. I assure you, the Mariners have already done that.
Saturday, Mariners lose. Sounders lose, knocked out of the League's Cup. Seahawks lose a preseason game. Stormwood lost Friday night, lost Sunday. The only team to win in that span was the Mariners winning on Sunday to snap their 5-game losing streak.
Wow. Okay.
You didn't piece this together?
No, and it's fucking August. I'm not paying that much attention to sports.
As we're about to talk about, even teams from the Seattle area, youth teams, were losing. So it was a rough weekend for Seattle sports, I would say. And Monday wasn't any better. So we got that to not look forward to, I guess.
Who are some notable 30s in Seattle sports history? I'm trying to think. I can't remember almost any.
Who are some notable 30s? Well, King Griffey Sr. wore 30 during his stint with the Seattle Mariners.
And if I only know that because of King Griffey Jr. with the Reds.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, I think Sr. wore 30 elsewhere, but obviously only relevant here that he wore it in Seattle. An image that is going to be coming up, already has, and it's going to be coming up so much more often once Bronny plays with LeBron in a Lakers game. Weirdly, I do not have that listed in my spreadsheet. Bradley McDougald is the only male athlete I have in here for number 30. I don't know how he ended up in here.
Always loved Bradley McDougald, though. Come on.
But number 30, a very notable number with the Seattle Storm. Tanisha Wright, of course, all-time great. And then Breanna Stewart.
I don't think I could have told you what number Stewie wore.
Are you aware that Breanna Stewart's wife tweeted about me last week?
What? Now we are getting to the good stuff. I don't care about the Seattle sports teams losing. Breanna Stewart's wife tweeted about you?
And so we did our rankings of the top 25
this was
players.
Negative, of course, right?
Nobody ever tweets about an individual author positive in this room. We did our rankings of the top 25 players in the WNBA, and Breanna Stewart ranked second, is she has both times we've done it this season, behind Asia Wilson, the presumptive MVP. And I pointed out that she was not playing at the same standard of her previous MVP seasons, including last year, and that she had a disappointing playoffs last year, and mused that that could be the first signs that she's heading out of her prime, nearing age 30. And the specific phrase I used, which I regret now, was aging out of her prime. And I think people really took aging out to be like aging out of the league, which was not at all how I intended it, obviously, but I think that's how it came off. And so there was an all caps aging out along with a do your homework, which as many people noted.
Do your homework on what? Yeah, what?
As many people noted was amusing because she had quoted she had screen capped the blurb. Like, to her credit, Marta Jarge, Stewie's wife, like, correctly named the author, cited the actual, piece in question. Like, she did a lot of good aggregation work here, but the homework was kind of all in there, and it didn't really prove the point that she was making.
Yeah.
But alas.
Homework wasn't the issue. She just disagreed with your perspective.
Correct. And then the Liberty put out a tweet.
They piled on the Liberty?
Oh, a lot of people piled on. That was a Janism, put out a tweet. They tweeted subsequently after. So Stewie dropped like 30 on the Sparks in their first game after the Olympic break and made three three-pointers consecutively in the second half. And the Liberty tweeted, aging like fine wine, put some respect on Breanna Stewart's name. Or
you also ranked her second in the league.
I mean, I think a fair criticism that I received on Reddit is like, well, the blurb was kind of negative for ranking her second in the league. And my point is that it's just kind of like an update on where players are moving back and forth. And the gap between her and Asia Wilson does not currently appear as close as it did last season when Stewie was MVP. So I don't know. Can't win them all.
You seem mostly fine with this.
Famous number 30 in Seattle sports. Well, we'll see if Stewie's upset when the Liberty come to town next week.
Well, turns out they don't build statues out of critics.
All right. Well, let's get to our toast. First off, last chance, everybody, if you want to sign up for PeltonCast Fantasy Football this season, make sure you email us, PeltonCast@gmail.com. If you've already emailed us or was part of the league last year and have emailed us, then you are set. Your place is secure, but want to be sure to get those leagues set and be able to start setting draft
times. How many
leagues
do we have right now? Are we at three?
I mean, I do think currently in terms of commitments, we are at three leagues, but we will surely get there.
Okay.
Just a few stragglers.
Am I in the Champions League?
The two sweetest words in the English language. By default.
There we go. Why go? Because you won two leagues?
I once again was in the top four in two leagues and cannot take two places in the Champions League. So once again, Mr. Fantasy Genius.
Sweet default. I haven't used that term in a while.
Mr. Fantasy Genius is only in the Champions League by virtue of my success, including winning. I don't think I won the Champions League. I won one of the two leagues. I can't even remember.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
I'd forgotten all about that. Well,
yeah, finally after, I mean, I don't know when my first fantasy football league was, probably 2005. So we're talking about like year 19 of fantasy football. Finally won one. I won championship.
Wow. This is news I hate to hear.
Especially when it occurred, especially 7 months after it occurred.
I now all of a sudden agree with Breanna Stewart's wife. Do your homework.
I think I did my homework on that one.
I agreed with her the first time.
All right, this time we have... Well, that's true. this week we have toast. That's how bad a week it's been in Seattle sports. It's not even toast. It's just toast. And it's not even a positive toast because South Hill Little League...
Is this pouring one out? This isn't a toast. You pour one out.
We're pouring
one out for South Hill Little League.
In this case, we're not pouring out anything alcoholic because they're 12-year-olds.
If you were watching Bad News Bears original version, you would be pouring one out alcoholic.
Have you watched that recently? Was there a
Absolutely
rewatch?
Absolutely, I did. There was back in the day a rewatch was on it. I watched it like 2 months ago or maybe even less. They finished the movie by just drinking some beers.
I do vaguely recall that. I watched
Oh my
it
God, that movie's amazing. I wish life was Bad News Bears in 1984.
Shouts to Kelly Leak. Anyways. South Hill Little League was eliminated on Sunday in the Little League World Series after losing their first two games in Williamsport. We did get some Little League related World Series related news involving the city of Seattle that the Mariners will face the Mets in the 2025 Little League Classic. And it's unfortunate they won't be taking on the Little League teams because I like their odds there.
Especially the pitchers pitching from 46 feet.
Feel like they could take that out of the park. We do not have a search for Seattle's best cookie this week. As you informed me much too late that you needed to record on Monday night because you are gallivanting off to the East Coast. Do you have anything to say about this trip?
No.
Oh, okay.
I told you I would search for Cleveland's best cookie.
You did say that.
Yeah. We're going to all pack it up and move to the Cleve and find Cleveland's best cookie.
There you go.
That happens to be open on a Saturday or Saturday afternoon or Sunday.
I mean, that's a pretty common time for locations with cookies to be opened.
Okay.
I guess bakeries may be running low on cookies by the afternoon, but it's not like they're closing up shop.
I'll be there on Saturday morning, and then I can walk to from downtown Cleveland.
Yes, I don't anticipate you heading out to Akron to find the greater Cleveland metropolitan area's best cooking.
Akron could be any amount of time from Cleveland, and I would believe you. Akron could be between 20 minutes and 6 hours from Cleveland, Ohio. And if you told me that, I'd be like, yeah, that sounds reasonable.
Would you? Okay, we're going to...
I'm guessing it's probably like an hour outside of Cleveland.
What should we search for? From the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame to St. Vincent St. Mary?
Yeah, absolutely. Those are the two sites and the two locations.
I mean, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is right near the stadiums. It's a pretty central location, right?
It's more than St. Vincent St. Mary's that...
I have no idea where that is.
The Zips football stadium.
Well, I think that's more likely to be out of town than St. Vincent St. Mary.
Okay.
It is a 43-minute drive with no traffic. That's longer than I would have expected. I would have said a half hour.
Okay. Have you ever been to Cleveland before?
I have not. I've never been to the state of Ohio somehow.
Wow.
It's a pretty big state for me to have not been
either.
To.
It's so funny. You know that you see those like things on like socials. I saw Jake Wallen post one of these where it's like cities you've been to, and it's all these like international cities. Cleveland, not on the list. I was like, I'm going to check one. Oh. Guess it's not Milan. Anyway, that's everything I have to say.
I would love to go to Ohio, but I just have my... I guess I did have the option to go to Ohio during some NBA finals and passed, but more because I didn't want to fly like 5 hours back and forth between Cleveland and San Francisco than the Cleve itself. All right, well, is it because we have no search for Seattle's best cookie, that takes us directly into... your favorite segment?
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at ya.
As I was watching the Mariners lose their 6 out of 7 games and their season end, I realized the answer to their problems. This franchise has to go back to the heyday. They've got to look for inspiration in the 90s. And you might say, I think the Mariners already are taking quite a bit of inspiration from the 90s. They have not one, but two statues to celebrate series win. But no, not those 90s. I'm talking must-see TV. This is a franchise about nothing, and they have to embrace a Costanza principle. The opposite. If every decision the Mariners have ever made is wrong, the opposite has to be right. The Mariners have spent the better part of 2 decades playing quote-unquote smart baseball, and it has gotten to the playoffs once. So now it's time to embrace the opposite of every smart baseball decision you know. If you think it's smart to retain the manager you have under contract who's been mostly above 500, nope, the opposite. It's time to fire him. Find the fieriest manager who will set a lineup on day one and leave it that way. Let the hitters work through their slumps. If you think it's smart to develop prospects, build from the youth up and a long-term roster, nope, trade them all. Go all in for proven major league talent. Future be damned. You're trusting an organization who has developed 3 players over the last 2.5 decades to develop a farm system into major league talent? Dustin Ackley would like to have a word. If you think it's smart to keep young pitching and build around a rotation mostly in their 20s, nope, the opposite. Trade them all this offseason for the best possible major league hitting return. This rotation has had shocking health for back-to-back seasons and 0 playoff appearances to show for it. Speaking of which, if you think it's smart to build around pitching because of the Marine layer, nope, the opposite. Go all in on hitting, spending every dollar there and finding only low money short-term starters. There's always an extra Mike Leake or Wade LeBlanc in the garage with the raincoats. And if you think strikeouts are the issue, nope. Let's go 3 true outcomes, motherfucker. It's time to lean into the weaknesses and turn them into assets. Because last offseason, you may have thought short-term, low-risk deals were the way to go, but actually, it's the opposite. Start spending some money on stars and free agency. It's clear that for a franchise whose best season of all time came the year after they let one of the best hitters of all time walk, whose roster decisions led to Ketel Marte, Teoscar Hernandez, Edwin Diaz, and I can't believe I'm saying this, Jesse Winker, playing for other teams, the opposite to every decision they've ever made has to be the right one. Even Frank Costanza can't be too worried about Buehner after the 96 World Series. And if they can't find the right person for the job, maybe they'll have to find a Bizarro Jerry.
Or maybe promote George in this particular case. Now, the one issue with your philosophy is if the Mariners think making trades constantly is good, nope, never make any trades at all.
No trades.
Those seem to conflict with some of your other, opposites.
You make trades in the offseason, set your roster right there, boom, done.
I mean, I don't think Jerry DePoto is known for not making trades in the offseason. I believe there are plenty of those involved as well.
The more that you think about this, it kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
I feel like I maybe even saw this on the Discord at one point.
Wait, really?
I don't know. Opposite every decision. Let me see here. And it doesn't pull up. So maybe I haven't. Maybe I just thought this. All right. I'm willing to admit I might be wrong here. But it does make sense. From that certain logic, I would say. Yes. I guess the other question is, which are the three players you credit the Mariners with developing?
Well,
I
started
at two, one of them,
and then Luca corrected me and was like three. And I was like, all right, you got me in the first half. Not going to lie.
Which was,
who do you think they are?
Felix. Are we counting Felix?
No, this is offensive players. This is hitters.
Oh, okay.
They've developed pitchers.
I guess Julio.
Uh-huh.
Seager.
Uh-huh.
So who was the third that they developed?
This was the one that I had forgotten in Luca.
And they have to play well in Seattle?
Well, yeah, I mean, it doesn't really count if they play well somewhere else.
Like Adam Jones doesn't count?
Yeah.
I don't know. Are you counting them as developing J.P. Crawford?
No.
Okay. Or Haniger?
He's on the current roster.
He's on the current? Oh, Cal Raleigh. Yeah,
the dumper!
Yeah, of course. Yes, that makes sense. Oh. Okay, that's fair.
Bright spot.
100%. Don't blame Cal.
Also, if you think you're going to grow a rally mustache to get better, opposite Cal, clean shaven, buddy.
Interesting.
You didn't even know that happened because you're not watching every game for some reason like I am.
No, I just tuned in Sunday. The Mariners are great as far as I know.
Did you actually only, that was the game that I missed. I watched all of these other games.
Well, that's starting to explain a lot. Maybe if we're talking opposites, if you watched every game and the Mariners lose them all, I mean, that just speaks for itself.
I will be seeing like no Mariners. Although actually East Coast on the West Coast is pretty amazing timing to watch baseball.
Right.
Fuck. They got me back. How much of the DNC did you watch versus the Mariners game?
Absolutely zero of the Mariners game. I don't regret it at all.
I'm like the cartoon with the sickos.
I have a trivia question for you.
Okay.
Can you name the only city is defined by Nielsen DMAs that is larger than Seattle that has never hosted a national convention?
We're like 12th?
I believe 13th. Yeah, 13th.
Is Washington, D.C. a strange guess?
It is not a strange guess. They are not the answer, only on a technicality.
Because it's like a smaller area?
No, they are a larger DMA. They technically hosted the 2020 Republican convention.
Because it was the COVID convention?
Yes. But also, like, D.C. doesn't need more politics.
No, that's why I guessed it. That's why I thought it was a trick question.
It's a great answer. It is not true. There is legitimately a slightly larger market than Seattle that has never hosted a convention.
I'm assuming the Bay Area must have.
The Bay Area has hosted four conventions.
Because all the Texas ones are bigger, but They must have, I guess, hosted conventions back in the day.
Not back in the day, actually.
Recently?
Hold on. I have lost the list that I had here. Dallas was 1984. Houston was 1928 and 1992.
You're like, not back in the day, 1984.
What they said, like, back in the day is 1928. That's
one of the other
day.
Ones was 1920 something.
That's like, that's what I'm saying. These go back to when is the first convention listed here? 1856?
I feel like it has to be in a state that's not a particularly important swing state.
I mean, that's a reasonable position to take.
So that kind of wipes out all the Midwest and the East Coast for the most part. Although, Boston?
Boston hosted 2004. It's the last before Chicago.
Was that John Kerry?
Correct. Non-swing state location for a convention.
I don't know.
I mean, there's only so many yeah. cities bigger than Seattle.
Well, I don't want to name all of them.
True. But you know some of them that aren't, a lot of them that aren't on the list.
You said it's slightly bigger, so it's not LA.
It is not LA, which is hosted
Chicago
twice, including in 2000.
Has. Philadelphia would have, probably, I assume. New York.
Yes. I mean, Philadelphia's hosted the third most. They first hosted in 1856.
The Bay Area. I feel like there aren't bigger markets in Florida. Or...
There is a bigger market in Florida. It just
Tampa,
is hosted. Yes.
Tampa area, yeah.
Tampa hosted in 2008. Or 2012.
We already ruled out Texas. I feel like the middle of the country. I mean, I guess maybe Denver. Is it slightly bigger market?
You'll remember when they went outdoors for Obama's nomination in 2008 at Invesco Field at Mile High.
Really? I'm surprised they didn't do 08 in Illinois.
I mean, they probably had to book it well before they knew that Obama was going to be the nominee.
Colorado was more of a swing state back then, though.
Correct. And it held it in Chicago in 96.
I don't know. What is this place?
The answer is Phoenix.
I was going to say Phoenix, but I didn't think they were a bigger market.
They are 11th on the list. Seattle is 13th. And it's Phoenix like is very plausible to host a future convention as demographics change.
However, it's like 115 degrees in Phoenix in August.
That's a good point. They do not tend all these. I mean, the Dallas and Houston conventions were probably pretty hot.
There's nowhere as brutal as Phoenix in the summer.
That is a fair point. So maybe Phoenix will stay ahead of it. Because I was going to say, like, Seattle probably at some point in our lifetimes will be the biggest city never to have hosted a convention.
We will probably never host one.
It just, like, it would be a pretty massive demographic change if Seattle ended up hosting an election.
Yeah, no, that's a bad sign.
Something has gone horribly wrong. Unless Seattle hosts a convention of the Cascadia elections.
I mean, yeah, because Phoenix, I mean, like, Arizona could be it is an important swing state.
Yes.
Okay, that's so funny that you brought that up, because I was thinking about a take that was the Mariners' record in the three most important swing states, right? Because it's generally agreed Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania are the which honestly, if we're being honest with ourselves, Pennsylvania is the only state that matters. But
I mean, that's a little strong, but yes,
Wisconsin and Michigan aren't looking as bleak at the moment. Pennsylvania matters a lot, and if Pennsylvania doesn't matter, then North Carolina, Arizona, Nevada, all those places matter, right? But Georgia. But I was looking at the Mariners' record in those three states, and the Mariners weren't quite bad enough. They're 5-10 in games played in those three states. So they're bad, but they weren't so bad that if you could just wipe those states from the map, the Electoral College or whatever, that the Mariners would be in the playoffs.
But in this particular road trip, the results in swing states, I mean, the results in a non-swing state were not so good.
That's against games, not in the states, because I included the Phillies.
Oh,
series.
Home games. Okay.
Yeah. Because I wanted to count also.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
I wanted to count the losses against the Tigers at home on the negative for the Mariners.
True.
I feel like the Central Division has just been really bad. But then the White Sox kind of skew it because they just kind of crush the White Sox.
Maybe MLB opponents have been bad.
For the Mariners?
Yeah.
After every game. Mm-hmm. I tell you, I watch all of these games. And they're like, well, you might look back at this series and point to this if the Mariners aren't in the playoffs. And I'm like, dog, they said it tonight. They're like, you might look back at this series and say to yourself, if only that one. And I'm like, there's no looking back. The amount of viewers you're going to have on these games are not going to exist. Mike Blowers.
You're saying the Mariners' swing games are fading?
Yeah, there just aren't. The like series against the Tigers matters a lot more if you're two games back, not if you're five.
I agree.
If you can't beat anybody, losing to the Tigers is fine because the Tigers are buddy.
And because, yeah, at this point, you're just playing for the draft pick.
No, I totally agree. They should be tanking hard. I don't know what territory they're in. We should actually look at that.
They're not in high territory, but as we found out a few weeks ago, like you can actually pick pretty high even if you have a 500-ish record because other teams forfeit their picks.
Wait, who's forfeiting their picks?
Teams that are subject to the competitive balance tax.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. Yeah, the Mariners are like right in the middle. But if they try hard enough, they could fall behind a lot of teams.
Shut all the pitchers down.
They're not good anyway, so who cares? Actually, they are. They're...
Yeah, the starting pitchers are still generally quite good.
Some of them are good. Can this just be the Mariners conversation? I think they could get down to below the Cubs. Right behind the Pirates. That should be the target. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. That'd be like the 11th pick. That's a pretty good pick in the draft.
Yeah.
What do you think is the far enough back draft that we would have likely have heard of the 11th pick in it? 2021?
I mean, I guess. I don't...
For you, it'd be like 1992.
I mean, you can just look up a list of 11th picks on Baseball Reference, can't you?
Oh, yeah, sure. Harry Ford is the 12th pick. This whole draft. I mean, Jack Leiter. There's some good players in there. Kumar Rocker. What a strange one. That's probably not far enough back.
Yes, I agree with that. All right, picks by overall number. Number 11 overall picks. I actually have heard of the 2023 number 11 overall pick. So
who's that?
I don't know how to pronounce his name, but the Angels first baseman who debuted against the Mariners after the trade deadline, or right or mm-hmm. before the yeah right after the trade deadline.
That's I have no idea who you're talking.
Nolan Chenault. Garrett Crochet was the 11th pick in 2020. Alek Manoah in 2019. So I've Kyle Lewis in 2016. So I've heard of a shocking number of 11 picks.
I mean, that's a good sign.
George Springer, Justin Smoke, Max Scherzer, Andrew McCutchen. Pretty good pick.
The 11th pick?
Yeah. Lee Tinsley was the 11th pick. Walt Weiss, Shane Mack. Now these are some classics. Yeah, this is my sweet spot.
Where were they at now? They're at 16. Corbin Carroll, pick 16. J.P. Crawford.
I'm familiar with Lucas Giolito.
Giolito, yeah.
Brett Lowry.
Brett Lowry's good. Nick Swisher. There's like some... at every pick in the first round.
Lance Berkman.
You're looking far enough back, there's going to be some good players.
Alan Benes. Mike Remlinger, Roberto Hernandez. Scott Bankhead. Oh, man. Steve Howe.
You just ignored Sean Green sitting right there.
Wait, did I scroll past? I did. I scrolled right past him.
49 dingers in 2001. Thank you.
Oh, I remember Sean Green. I don't not remember Sean Green. I did miss him. Lance Parrish.
The bonus is also just so much better. What is it like? 3.4 million this year? It's between like 3 and 4 million there. What is it? 11?
Well, it looks like Pedro Morlando signed for under slot.
I did see that, yeah. You save like a tiny bit of money, like maybe $1 million or something.
The Mariners are willing to spend that money, so let's have them spend it.
If only they could have a replication of Alec Manoa's season. Actually, he was good for 2 years. You probably know nothing about this player, do you?
No, I remember him.
Do you remember
I don't
they got
know that
sent
he's...
down to single A the year after?
No, I don't. The career trend, I don't know anything about.
He was third in Cy Young voting in 2022, and then 2023 was sent down to single A.
Maybe I do vaguely remember that. Because I feel like, you know, it probably didn't happen around the time the Mariners were playing them, but I do vaguely remember it.
But yeah, no, I think they should tank.
Okay.
Don't you?
Yeah, obviously. I'm in favor of tanking in every situation.
I was like, who's pick number 15? Look, the Mariners picked number 15 last year. This is where they're at. This is like, I feel they're like Jeff Fisher now. That's what the Mariners are.
But they're not, because they're going 9-7 or 8-8 and missing the playoffs. They're not actually going 7-9.
Didn't Jeff Fisher have some like 9-7s in there?
I mean, in Tennessee, he did. I mean, I think it was all 7-9s in LA until they went like 5-4 the year that he got fired.
I gotta say, pick 15 has not been a very good one.
Okay, there we know to steer away from that one.
I mean, Chase Utley back in the year 2000, but as players who have like positive WAR, there are not a lot of them.
He never reached 500 in his 5 seasons as coach of the Rams. His last season at 500 was 2009 in Tennessee, so wow, a year before he was fired, and a year after they went 13-3. So life comes at you fast.
I feel like Scott Servais has a lot of like Jeff Fisher qualities to him.
I do not agree with this assessment whatsoever.
I don't even... Logan Gilbert, pick 14. In fact, best pick 14 in quite a while.
Jeff Fisher was like an extremely conservative old school coach. You understand that like the criticism of Scott Servais is he's too by the numbers, which I was thinking about the other day. What was the correct analogy of being too like... He's too handsome.
Oh my God. Okay. If that's your perspective about the Mariners.
You think that it's a good thing to manage by gut in baseball?
I just think that Scott Servais is not... We're not like mission accomplished with Scott Servais.
Again, as we've talked about repeatedly on this podcast, managers do not matter. They do not matter.
But sometimes it might make sense to just have a new manager just for literally the purpose of shaking things up.
You're a believer in this shaking things up. The shaking things up is just regression to the mean. That's all it is. And you confuse the regressing to the mean for the point is the regression happens whether you fire the coach or in this case manager or not, but people confuse the regression to the mean for the benefit of firing the coach. This is like literally one of the founding principles of Kahneman and Tversky's work.
I was trying to think if Scott Servais was fired, who I would want as the manager. And I'm just like, I don't know. Like, it's funny because in other sports, I would have people. Well, football. I take that back. Football is the only sport that coaching matters.
I think basketball, it matters. In all sports, it's overrated because coaches get too much credit when they're successful and too much blame when they're unsuccessful.
But I think coaching matters in football a lot. Because there's no, like, there's very few scenarios in baseball where you're like, should I try to get a hit or not?
Yeah, you're illustrating my point.
No, I understand, but like, something has to change.
No, I mean, yes, but they should get players capable of making contact with the baseball. And again, the park is what they need to change more than anything.
How are they going to do that? I was thinking about that too. Why don't they just move the fences and change the shape? Like, if it is proven that this is wrong, it's strange that it only affects the Mariners, though.
Again, it doesn't only affect the Mariners. We went over this. I did a whole study for you. where they have the greatest strikeout to walk ratio among their pitching staff in MLB history at home and are average on the road.
Okay, but do their players still strike out on the road?
I mean, they struck out plenty tonight. Yes, they still strike out. I haven't isolated the offensive strikeout rates. I don't know if I've necessarily done that in comparison to league average. But certainly, again, as we talked about, it is the highest strikeout park factor in a single season in StatCast history.
This year.
Yes.
So I don't know how you're just like, everything changed this year. It's always high.
Again, my theory that I put forward was that it has something to do with moving the start time from 7:10 to 6:40.
But why did that not affect the previous seasons? This isn't the first year that game's been played at 6:40.
But it's only the second season, and the strikeout rate did go up at home last season and has always been high. So it's not like an implausible theory.
I still feel like people are looking for solutions to things that are just the players aren't very good.
I mean, I agree that the players should be better, but the players projected good and then they didn't perform to bad. Their strikeout rate is 29.3% at home. Prior to tonight, their strikeout rate on the road was 26.3%. So it's a 3% delta. I'll have to look up where that would rank in the league.
Can they just change the color of the center field wall?
I mean, it was that simple. I'm sure they would have already done it by this point.
Is it the orient? First off, can we just come back to, there's one person in the face of the earth who was bold enough to say that the kingdom was great.
All right, you raise a fair point here. The Mariners would be tied for the highest strikeout rate in MLB and strictly in road games.
But your argument would be that they like...
No, I mean, they're striking out way too much. It's indisputable.
They're just demoralized. Brant Brown, the ghost of Brant Brown. Brant Brown has just texted Randy Rosarino when he got to Seattle. And some pointers.
Oh boy, you know, the funny thing about it is
they've made me dislike Randy Rosarena, this team. That's how bad this team is. He's up and I'm just like, oh, this fucking guy. That's why I hate having good players on the Mariners, because it makes me hate that. It's why your college team should never hire, like, if Brandon Roy was ever the coach of the Huskies, I'd be like, nope, no thank you. I'm good with Brandon Roy right now. I don't need to hate Brandon Roy.
You know, the weird thing about the Mariners striking out so much is they're not even in a swing state.
Oh, wow. You remember,
really brought that full circle.
That was very nice. We used to love Jimmy Lake. Like, really, we legitimately thought Jimmy Lake was amazing.
Yeah. So has this been our Mariners segment?
Yeah, just drop it in right after.
Okay.
Or are you saying you're going to have the Mariners section at the very end? Because I'm fine with that. I personally do not want the Mariners on the rundown. I don't want to talk about the Mariners. I don't want to think about the Mariners. I just want to watch every single out. And then be angry to myself. I was so mad. It's just like when there's a 0-0 game, you just wait around for the home run to be hit and the game to be over. We've done this over and over and over again.
Then why would you be mad about it?
Because I don't know. Why do I keep watching?
That's a question only you can answer, friend.
It is kind of interesting to play the Dodgers in LA. It's a very rare thing. Meanwhile, you were concerned with the future of the country.
I mean, you
couldn't even watch a bad baseball team play baseball.
I don't know that I would qualify. I don't know that I would justify watching it, like, give myself credit for watching the DNC because I'm concerned with the future of our country. I don't know.
I was asking Kayleen if she remembers, because Lugo's in his room scrolling TikTok, of course, because he's a youth. And I was like, the Mariners are playing in LA, like something that they almost never do.
But now they're going to do every other year going forward.
I know, but still. It's still Shohei, right? Like, it's still a fun game to watch.
True.
The Democratic National Convention is happening. And I'm like, Luca has chosen sitting in his room scrolling TikTok.
I mean,
it's the most old man take that I could have ever had.
Jen Oval will not be watching conventions. The
I
conventions
know.
will take place strictly on TikTok. It'll be 15-second speeches at a time.
I'm the same though. That's the annoying thing. Is like I'm just like that's where all my Waltz content comes from, and there's a lot of it. The man is great for TikTok, but I just thought that was funny, and I was like, Keelan, do you remember the DNC being on when you were a kid? And it's just like one of those things that you don't even really like watch it. You know what I mean? It's just on in the living room, and
right.
You sort of pick some up in the same way that like Evening Magazine would be on. It was just like or the Olympics. I feel like we weren't tuning in. It was most of the time when you were a kid, one of like your living room TV is just on NBC, right?
Until we moved to CBS on Monday nights, and just keep it there.
Yeah, well, I mean, they own Monday nights. But right, like the TV was just on NBC or King or whatever, just kind of permanently.
I mean, I'm sure there was some other programming that was in, but yes.
Whatever they were putting down.
So yeah, no, I don't have any specific memories of any conventions prior
I like
to.
Kind of, I feel like I have
probably
like the feeling of it. I remember watching, because I cared a lot in 04. We didn't have good polling at the time, so I didn't realize how doomed of an election that was. I thought there was a chance. And then by 08, I think, I'm sure that I watched it, but I was like an adult. You know what I mean? Like I was on my own.
So roundup, I guess. We got here. Well, we mentioned this with the Sounders. A 3-0 loss in the League's Cup quarterfinals Saturday against LAFC in familiar fashion after they lost 3-0 to LAFC in their previous matchup in the regular season last month. LAFC opened the scoring in the 14th minute, doubled the lead in the 25th, going up 3-0 when Jeannie Buonga got on the scoreline early in the second half. Sounders mustered just one shot on goal, though they did actually out XG LAFC 0.8 to 0.7. So there may have been some bad luck in terms of preventing goals on defense. Before that, the secondary transfer window closed without the Sounders landing any of their targeted signings using the money saved in the Javier Arriaga trade earlier this season. They could still add players within MLS, but lost the opportunity to augment depth outside it after chasing several higher profile additions. So the good news is up in against everybody.
I feel like that deserves like one of the like web graphics that people make when something bad happens. She's like, Seattle Sounders failed to sign any targets during second transfer window.
The good news is against everybody that isn't LAFC or Necaxa, I guess. Sounders have been playing quite well lately. They will resume MLS play Saturday in Minnesota in a matchup of two teams in the bottom half of the West playoff standings. Sounders, you'll recall, tied for sixth on 37 points, one back of Vancouver, while the Loons are currently clinging to the last West playoff spot in ninth with 33 points. It's the start of a busy three-match week ahead of the U.S. Open Cup semifinal against LAFC, who will be coming off having played both the semifinals in either the finals or a third-place game in Leagues Cup. So it does feel like the Sounders are going to have a bit of an advantage on LAFC
4D chess
in that regard. And also that match will be played at Starfire in Tequila as opposed to at Lumen Field, the site of these recent shellackings by LAFC. So perhaps an opportunity for the Sounders to change their fortune there.
That game's at Starfire. Should we go to that? It's pretty fun to go to Starfire.
It is pretty fun to go to Starfire. We'll consider it.
Okay.
And then a
what
Derby
day is that, by the way?
Actually, I probably won't consider it because I think that the Storm are playing opposite.
Is that August 30th?
It is August 28th, I believe, that they are playing.
Okay.
And then the
I'm
three match.
It's the first day of school.
The three match week also concludes with a Derby match at Portland that carries a lot of playoff implications on Sunday, September 1st. So we'll see how the Sounders manage this in terms of minutes, but obviously just a lot easier without any more Leagues Cup games. Seattle Reign FC made a big trade on Monday. They sent Bethany Balser, the franchise's third all-time leading goal scorer with 39 NWSL league goals, to Racing Louisville in exchange for midfielder Jalen Howell and $50,000 in allocation money. is compared to the undrafted Bolser. Howell brings far more pedigree, having been drafted number two overall out of Florida State, where she twice won the Herman Trophy, is National Player of the Year, and led the Seminoles to a pair of national titles. She was drafted in 2022, excelled as a rookie, starting all 22 games and ranking fourth in the league in tackles won. Howell was named team captain in 2023. This season, she missed all of May due to a calf injury, but started their last three games before the Olympic break, including a 1-1 draw in Seattle on June 23rd. She's earned five caps with U.S. Women's National Team, although none since 2022. And it is a homecoming of sorts. Her dad, John Howell, finished his NFL career as a safety with a season for the Seahawks, played for them in 2005, and according to Wikipedia, although I did not double check this, was injured in the Tony Romo game. That was the final game.
That, I sort of remember that name, John Howell.
It's like, so like, I saw, you know, a couple of photos of him. He wore number 40 that season. He will not be coming up when we talk about famous 40s in Seattle sports history, alas.
I assume so. He played in 10 games with the Seahawks in 05. It was probably mostly special teams.
Oh, no, he played. Yeah, no, I guess he was in the roster in 2006, but not. Yeah, did not see any action. Because he was forced to retire, I think. No, he was already on IR prior to that game. He was injured in week 10, so he did not play. And that was not the Romo season. You're right. The 05 was the Super Bowl season.
He did play in 2006.
He did
one game in 2006 in the playoffs. They brought him back for the playoffs.
Oh, okay. There you go. Yeah. All right.
So he didn't play in the regular season, but he did play. Yeah. That's one of those names where you're like, you feel like you wouldn't forget players in the moment. And then just like,
I don't know. There's a lot of players on NFL rosters.
That is true.
Right of the Valkyries. On Saturday, Hart reported that Bolser, quote, expressed interest in pursuing other opportunities elsewhere during discussions on an extension beyond the one that she previously signed in January through the 2025 season. Bolser subsequently cryptically tweeted, "People will write the narrative they want to write, but the truth will always come to light." So we'll see. I actually think a lot of times the truth doesn't come to light.
I was going to say, people are way more confident about the truth coming to light about things.
Yeah.
It's not like fucking, I don't know, whatever. I'm stopping saying anything.
Yeah, please don't finish that sentence. The Rain will return from the Olympic break to honor Megan Rapinoe by retiring her number 15 jersey pregame on Sunday before they host the North Carolina Courage, a game that'll be on ESPN2. For the Rain, just the fifth number retired by any NWSL team, and they're opening up seating throughout the lower bowl. On the field, it'll be the first chance to see newcomers. Now Howell, we'll see how much she plays, but also Norelia Mondesir and Anna Maria Cernogorcevic, who they signed during the Olympic break.
I was not even going to say anything bad. I was just like, this isn't Watergate. Like, there's right. not...
I agree. There's not going to be an extended investigation of this at all likelihood. This game I may be going to see the Megan Rapinoe jersey retirement. Hopefully a shorter speech than Sue Bird's last year.
Yeah, she went like an hour 45.
Something like that. I'd have to double check my news story on it. Well, speaking of the Seattle Storm, they lost their first two games back from the Olympic break. As I mentioned in the intro, it was a heartbreaker Friday night in Atlanta. The Storm led by as many as 14 before the Dream came back to take the lead. An improbable, off-balance Jewel Lloyd three-pointer with 4.1 seconds left tied the score. But left enough time on the clock that former Storm center Tina Charles delivered the game winner on the ensuing possession with 1.1 seconds left. Did you see any of this one?
No, I've seen any of these Storm games.
On Sunday, the Storm were down 4 with 7:27 left in Indiana before the Fever finished the game on a 24-11 run behind a career-high 6 three-pointers from Spokane native Lexi Hull. The first win by Indiana in the season series after the Storm took the first three head-to-head games in lopsided fashion. So the combination of those two losses, some wins by the Minnesota Lynx, all of a sudden the Storm's chances of finishing in one of the top four spots in the WNBA standings and earning home court advantage in the first round looking a lot worse. They are still only a half game back of the Las Vegas Aces, but you know, the Aces have made up a lot of ground since their slow start to the season, and they are now a full two games back of Minnesota in the standings, 2.5 of the Connecticut Sun. The road trip continues Tuesday, wraps up, I should say, Tuesday in Washington against the Mystics. The Storm will then face Washington again next Monday at home after getting a little five-day break here. Something to watch. The Storm must sign a player Tuesday to fill their open 11th roster spot after Keanu Williams' seven-day contract expired. Coincidentally, Tuesday also, by my math, using the herhoopstats.com salary database, appears to be the first day they can afford to sign Gabby Williams to a rest-of-season contract, and it's the WNBA trade deadline. So we still don't know whether Gabby Williams will play in the WNBA all this season. The Athletic had a piece Monday reiterating what Rachel Galligan had reported last week, that Williams is still deciding whether to play, in part because of her concern over potentially being designated a core player and taken out of unrestricted free agency next season, although that it seems unlikely given her modest WNBA production relative to what she's accomplished internationally with France, which is, I think, where, you know, a lot of people really had their eyes opened by Gabby Williams in that gold medal game against the USA. Tuesday is also the WNBA trade deadline, not typically a date that brings a lot of action because it's so difficult to make trades midseason in a league with a hard cap and only 12 teams. But we will see if there's any action. All right, for the first time in a while, we've got a UW men's basketball update. The non-conference schedule is out.
Hello.
The Huskies will face Western Oregon in an exhibition on October 29th before hosting UC Davis on November 25th to kick off the Danny Sprinkle era.
These all sound dangerous to me.
A rare non-conference two road game sees them travel to Nevada on November 9th. And they will wrap, and I guess they won't wrap up, but the culmination of non-conference play, they host three Washington schools consecutively during the month of December, Eastern on December 10th, Washington State in the Apple Cup Series on December 18th, and then Seattle U on December 23rd.
Well, that's a pretty uneventful non-conference schedule.
I mean,
right?
I don't know what you were expecting there. Like, their marquee games are going to be the tournament that they're playing in, which I do not remember off the top of my head. But we have previously discussed that on the pod. I assume it's one of the ones in Nevada, because in Las Vegas, because they all are at this point. Oh, no, they are playing in Palm Springs at the Acrisure Invitational, Colorado State on Thanksgiving Day, and then the winner or loser, depending on the outcome of the TCU Santa Clara matchup.
I remember that. We've discussed this.
Black Friday. Yeah.
Yeah.
I said so.
There we go.
Look at you paying attention to something we talked about on the podcast.
Not that much.
UW football scrimmaged last Saturday, the final public practice before beginning the season in 12 days as we record this against Weber State. It's coming. Didn't seem like there was a lot necessarily to take from this practice. It seems like more or less the starters have largely stayed, I think, what we expected coming into fall camp, at least from what we can tell. Although, you know, who knows? They're going to close practices, not have any media availability this week. So perhaps there will be some surprises by the time we get to August 31st. And, you know, hopefully the health remains the same. But it's been a relatively quiet fall camp, I would say, so far for UW football, which is what you want, probably.
For sure.
Well, speaking of quiet, the Seahawks, a 16-15 loss Saturday in Tennessee in their second preseason game. Starters did not play this one on either side. Sam Howell played the first half. A quarterback went 11-14 for 153 yards, throwing a touchdown to Aesop Winston Jr. and leading three scoring drives in total. I think looked quite good. Not good enough. I don't know if you saw the tweet that a few people responded to about, you know, give me one good reason Sam Howell shouldn't be the Seahawks starting quarterback. It's like, bro, what are we doing here?
Who tweeted that?
Some NFL meme account, it seemed like.
Okay.
PJ
Walker.
You
don't have to respond to everything every person says.
I agree.
Okay, that's just letting you know that. Things get said into the world, but that doesn't mean you need to take them seriously.
But a lot of followers for that account, let me put it that way. PJ Walker played the second half.
But wait, I want to let you know. You don't have to respond to everything
respond
that is said from accounts with a lot of followers.
I'm not responding to anything. I'm
most
not responding
of the followers
to Rita Stewart's wife.
Not real human beings. Most of the followers.
I'm just peacefully over here on Blue Sky. Just living my life, man.
The peaceful over there?
It's very quiet.
Very peaceful.
PJ Walker played the second half, went 4 of 8 for just 38 yards. Kenny McIntosh got the bulk of the action at running back, had 8 carries for 46 yards. It was a quiet night for George Halani and Kobe Lewis, both fighting for roster spots at running back, who combined for 2 yards on 6 carries. Winston had a team-high 47 receiving yards. Laviska Shenault Jr. also had 3 catches, continuing to solidify his spot in the wide receiver rotation. Cody White had a 33-yarder. With injuries at tight end, we'll talk about those in a second. Brady Russell had another 2 catches. He seems destined for the roster. And fourth rounder AJ Barner had a 17-yard catch on third down, which was nice to see given he hasn't been particularly productive thus far. For the second straight game, Derek Hall had a sack. He seems like the breakout star of Seahawks preseason. Safety
Derek Hall looks awesome.
Yeah. Also had that play that Mike McDonald raved about that went after it went viral, where he blew up a tight end who was coming across the formation to try to block him, and did not block him. Safety Ty Okada came up with a pick in the fourth quarter. The Seahawks settled for a field goal and a 15-13 lead after that, which allowed the Titans to come back for the 16-15 win. Although who wins preseason games is totally meaningless.
Yeah, I think if there's... Oh, do you have more on this?
Nope.
I think if there's anything that could be taken from this preseason game, it's that another day has passed and you are now a day closer to the real season starting.
That's true. Injuries at tight end. George Fant, still undisclosed why he's been unavailable recently, although there's some hope he might be able to return to practice this week. Farrell Brown suffered an injury in the scrimmages with the Titans, posted on Instagram Monday that he's getting a second opinion this week in hopes of being able to play week one. And then Jack Westover also missed Saturday's game with a hamstring injury.
No, I did see this, but still mad about it.
If it opens the door for him to stay on the roster via IR, then it could be a positive.
No, that is not how we want to do things.
Well, I don't know that he's beating out the guys ahead of him on the tight end depth chart at this point, so that might be how we have to do things. Some happier news injury-wise, Connor Williams got some work Monday as the Seahawks returned to practice back at home. So you're going to be in Cleveland for the Seahawks-Browns preseason game?
Yes, I am. And a fun fact about that is the Seahawks-Browns preseason game is happening in Seattle, Washington.
Yes, I'm aware of that. I was just saying it's an interesting note. Not that you were going to be going to the Seahawks preseason game.
I'm sure the city is going to be a buzz.
Please report back to us on how everyone is feeling in Cleveland about the team.
And their third preseason game. Is this the one that they'll play starters in for a little bit?
Maybe.
I think Mike McDonald is fully from the McVay era camp about starters in preseason.
I mean, he did play a starting defense in week one. It's plausible they would play, you know, the starters might play a series or two. Yeah, I think it's more plausible that they would try to play them in a home game than in these two road games, I guess I would say. So we'll see. All right, that's all I had.
All right. I'm just going to be there taking the temperature of people in Cleveland about the that is the game.
I'm trying to think. Ask everybody about the Nick Harris trade and what they think.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. The whole city is going to be just. It'll be one of those things where in movies, you look over and see on the newspaper the headline that is pertaining to it. And I'll probably get to the airport. This would be 2.5 weeks after the trade happened. And I'll walk in and look over and be Harris traded back to Browns.
You're going to get in a ride share and the driver is going to be hey, where are you from? And you're going to be Seattle. And wow, that's where Nick Harris got traded from.
He went to the University of Washington, right? I follow his career closely. You're talking about backup center for the Cleveland Browns, Nick Harris?
What do you mean starting center for the Cleveland Browns, Nick Harris? I don't know.
Or a seventh round pick for a sixth round pick?
Because their starter got injured, right? This is why they traded for Nick Harris. I don't know about him vis-a-vis Cleveland's previous backup, but
they had to hit the break in case of emergency Nick Harris line.
I mean, look, they felt strongly enough to trade for Nick Harris instead of waiting for him to potentially get waived at the end of training camp. Like, they legitimately valued Nick Harris.
That is true. He's valued at least the difference of 30 picks.
I don't know. That might be optimistic at this point.
Well, we don't know. I'm not saying one team's going to be in one place. Maybe that's a compliment to the Browns.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess it could be all the way up to
it could be
between the sixth and seventh rounds. So like it could be like 70 stuff. Picks.
Yeah. Okay.
Wow. There you go.
Yeah, that's huge. If the Seahawks win the Super Bowl and the Browns are the worst team in the league, or vice versa,
are they really gonna regret it? Also, on your trip out to Akron, I'm curious if they have Chuck Klosterman statues there.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, for his time spent there, not even growing
or
up.
Or Brian Windhorst, for that matter.
The Akron Beacon Journal. Did Windhorst work at the Akron Beacon Journal, too?
Yeah, they were coworkers.
Wow. What a time to be in Akron.
A
very young LeBron James was traveling those streets.
I've told you. I mean, yes. They once did a podcast together on Wendy's original ESPN podcast that long predated the Hoop Collective. So my request last year, which has not yet been fulfilled, was for Wendy to set up a podcast where I could be on with Klosterman.
Okay.
So we'll see if that ever happens.
That, Brianna...
Oh no. Chuck Klosterman's team Marta?
I feel like Chuck Klosterman also is a I don't know if he does like the three-man podcast. I feel like it's more of like a conversation between two people.
I mean, I think there are podcasts he goes on that have multiple guests.
All right, fair enough.
So we'll see.
That's one of the books that I have downloaded.
Which one?
I've been, since Spotify added audiobooks, just like going through the Chuck Klosterman catalog again. So I am on Sex, Drugs, and Cocoa Puffs.
There you go. Let me just tell you. That's a throwback.
Like watching 30 Rock now. 30 Rock still hilarious. Like,
I watched 30 Rock over the weekend.
But you watch it sometimes and you're like, wow, I cannot believe they're saying those words on TV. Or some of these jokes or whatever. Listening to Killing Yourself to Live is like, whoa, he is really saying that through 2024 standards. It is very shocking, some of the perspectives that he has in that book. But that was a way that people thought around the year 2002, 2003.
I don't know if you rewatched Pulp Fiction. Kind of shocking, some of the things that are said in there.
But that like makes more sense to me because it's Pulp Fiction. Like Chuck Klosterman was like, it's supposed to be like edgy movie. Chuck Klosterman had like normal middle of the road opinions about things.
I don't know if I would necessarily describe that as Chuck Klosterman's appeal. But I agree that like
I'm not going to highlight them here, but there are some parts where I'm like, whoa.
What was the thing previously you weren't going to highlight?
The Bethany Balser, that was fine.
Yeah. Things that have where the truth has not come to light. Yes.
Yeah.
A lot of things are not getting into it.
I feel like they're like rappers who tweet that all the time. They're like people who find out. It's like, no, we've all forgotten about that. Turns out, Chingy, nobody's paying that much attention.
Chingy is subtweeting all the time.
You know that there have been tweets where they're like, people are going to find out that these truths and just like, no, they're not.
Or maybe they will and they just won't care that much.
Exactly. Yeah.
People always underestimate that.
Have you watched Anyone But You?
I have not watched Anyone But You. I have watched part of it over someone's shoulder on a flight, though.
Oh, wow. The worst kind of person. I go out of my way, even if I'm not do that.
I mean, was it like like, staring down. It's just like, I'm in an aisle seat. You're gonna see some stuff.
I get so like, I hate when I always watch on my phone, so it's pretty small, but I downloaded the movie Reality, starring Sydney Sweeney, to watch on my flight to New York. Of course, the Chuck Klosterman, Bill Simmons podcast, whatever the Rewatchables is. What's that show?
Rewatchables isn't out this week.
Are they not doing it? It hasn't come out yet.
No, Klosterman said it was going to be on Wednesday, or Simmons said it was going to be on Wednesday at the start of the pod. This is just updating you on what we said on the Bill Simmons podcast.
Podcast coming to that and point going.
Of the pod.
What is the name of this TV show? I have not watched any of it yet, but I'm kind of curious to watch it. Industry.
Oh yeah, everyone's a buzz about Industry.
Downloaded the first three episodes of Industry. I have expired eight episodes of Hacks that I never watched. Maybe I'll renew that download. And then Sex, Drugs, and Cocoa Puffs. But
are you not watching the season of Hard Knocks? You just giving up on that?
I just don't.
Room Dunsay's on there, man.
I know. I just don't. I've had some this month where I'm like, do I care about sports? I care about
you. You only care about the watching the Mariners, even though you hate them. That's all you'll do.
That is the sport that I care about, and it is the one that I get the least amount of enjoyment from.
Sometimes yep. I wonder about you.
That's all true. Like, the heart wants what it wants.
Okay.
No, I've never liked Hard Knocks that much.
It's objectively wrong about this.
Like, any of the Hard Knocks. Even, like, I enjoy it when I watch it, but it's not a thing. I don't feel compelled to watch it. But what I did feel compelled to watch was Anyone But You.
The perfect plain movie. It was literally discussed while we're updating people on other on Ringer podcasts. Discussed on an episode of The Big Picture how everyone watches Anyone But You on airplanes.
Not on an airplane.
Oh, okay.
I sat at home playing NCAA Football 25. All of this is like, that's always happening in the background or whatever. Whatever I'm doing, there's NCAA football on. But
is there NCAA football on in the background right now?
That's what I'm saying. Is like, I care about college football a lot, and I care about the Mariners for some reason. And that's kind of where the list ends at the moment. By the time we get to September, then I'll care about the Seahawks too. But Anyone But You, I was having a conversation about it with a person who I thought disliked it, the movie. And after watching it, I was having all these arguments in my head with that person about why it was a good movie. And I was just like, you're trying to judge. You can't judge this movie in the like, through the specter of like film or whatever.
Cinema.
You have to be, yeah.
The you have Scorsese. To be like, did you see, by the way, that Martin Scorsese had a Avengers cake?
He was being trolled with the cake.
I don't understand the con. I got none of the context other than I believe it's his 80th birthday.
The best part of the Grand Budapest Hotel Rewatchables was them joking about the Avengers during it. That was excellent. But Anyone But You is
someone photoshopped it, I guess.
Oh, that's bullshit. This AI.
Oh, maybe this is. Oh no, this is 81st birthday. So maybe this was last year. Maybe I'm wrong. Okay, yeah. Martin Scorsese's daughter trolled him over Marvel. Okay, there we go.
Oh yeah, I love that. I love that. You have to watch it like you're watching a stupid rom-com in 2024, and it's phenomenal because we don't get that many of these movies. That's why I told you. In fact, listening. I went and listened to The Big Picture. I never listened to The Big Picture before, but I was like, I'm going to go listen to them talking about Twisters because I really feel like I want to like champion like kind of stupid movies, but that are not Marvel movies right now.
I mean, the thing about movies that's I think sometimes people forget, and TV shows to a lesser extent, is they're supposed to be entertainment.
Exactly. All of this shit is supposed to be entertainment. That's why I hate the Mariners, but I'm still watching.
I don't know if I quite agree with that logic, but okay.
With everything, I think people forget all the time that like Scott Servais said it. He in a game, he was like this. He's like, I want to let the players like be themselves. We're in an entertainment business. And I was like, thank God, Scott Service. They shouldn't fire you for at least the next week. Because I feel like people kind of get kind of a little bit misconstrued about what the purpose of many things are. And I just sat there and I watched all of Anyone But You and I loved it. And then I didn't think about it again after that. And that's what it's supposed to happen.
I don't know. Now it appears to me that there was not, this is a Photoshop, that there was not an actual Marvel kick, but his daughter did talk about getting him a Marvel kick for sure. So like there you go. That's the Peltoncast level of research you've come to expect.
Love
I mean,
it.
I don't know if you saw this. There was a little controversy in your Discord about your Glenn Powell take.
Oh, those people haven't seen Twisters.
Is he really hot in Twisters?
Absolutely, he is.
Okay, well.
Glenn Powell has not yet
seen it, but in preparation.
Did I tell you that I watched Everybody Wants Some? !!
Well, I mean, you mentioned in the Discord that you were like 60% through it, and it was clear how much better than everyone else Glenn Powell was.
He is the...
But you've watched The Hitman, right?
I've seen like all, I'm I guess deep in the Powellverse now. I've seen all these movies.
But you know, the other guy from The Hitman is in
it's just
Everybody
called
Wants Some.
Is it called The Hitman?
No, I'm thinking of the Fall Guy probably. Yes.
Who's the other guy?
The police officer, the corrupt police officer in Hitman is one of his teammates.
Oh, just Austin Amelio?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, which teammate is his? Is he?
I don't know that. That information is unclear. I haven't watched Everybody Wants Some since it first went on video, or you know, back then.
When the picture's like 30 years old. Oh yeah. The pitcher gets like kicked off campus because he's like a senior transfer and he's 30, and I was like, I kind of love this. At first, like the whole movie, I was like, I kind of want a little bit of baseball. And then they started playing baseball, and it was pretty good baseball.
Yeah.
It was really quite fun about just like it's funny because it's like, yeah, the spiritual sequel to Dazed and Confused. It's like way worse than Dazed and Confused.
I mean,
I thought it was a great movie, but
pretty
like,
much every movie is way worse than Dazed and Confused.
It ended and I was like, huh, all right. That was like a few hours that we spent with these dudes. That was pretty fun.
I feel like that spiritual sequel term hurt it, quite frankly. I wish it wasn't out there in the ether. I, in preparation for eventually seeing Twisters, for the first time in my life, watched the 1996 film Twister.
Twister, yeah, okay.
So there you go.
Philip Seymour Hoffman's hat.
Oh. Philip Seymour Hoffman's everything.
Well, in the new movie, basically the Philip Seymour Hoffman character is Tunde Adebimpe from TV on the Radio.
Oh, nice.
Right, at the end of the movie, I was like, I immediately looked up who it was because I was like, who was that guy? And I was like, oh, it was Tunde. Across the street from your storefront cemetery.
All right. Well, if your instinct to listen to the Peltoncast was wrong, then please don't do the opposite.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
That's all part of canon because we didn't do that part first.
Peltoncast canon. That line is not now because it's after we signed off.
Yeah, that's not canon.